Welcome to the Bible Magazine. We again have our good friend Pete Owen joining us for another conversation on the news and the things that are happening in the world. The big news has been, I think, America moving in to stop the Houthis from stopping world shipping moving through the Red Sea and the Gulf. So we've got some interesting things to discuss, and it's time for another update. So we welcome Pete to the channel again. Pete, it's a little later your time, and we appreciate you taking the time with us. It is it's good to see you. Do you still feel like things are moving in the right direction?
Great question. Absolutely. You know, I think we've always got to be mindful of the fact that we're focused on the big picture, and sometimes the minutiae, the sort of little details on the way, you're like, oh, that's so exciting, that just fits in perfectly, and that often is really thrilling. But ultimately, it is the big picture that we're looking at. And, you know, you just mentioned there, John, about the Houthis and what the Houthis are doing and have been doing for some time now. In fact, you know, we're probably talking, well, at least a year since the Houthi rebels have been firing their rockets, and that the British have had a good go, which biblically we think is interesting, and perhaps we'll sort of come on to that shortly, but to no avail, really. And the Houthis have sort of said, oh, you know, we're going to be targeting all the ships that have got any connection to Israel in our support for our Muslim brethren, Hamas and Hezbollah. But actually, half the ships that they've targeted, by all accounts, have got nothing to do with Israel as such. They're just disrupting global trade and being a menace, no doubt with, you know, Iranian backing, to just stop those ships being able to go the quick route through the Suez Canal and out into the Mediterranean. They're having to go through Africa. So I think that it is interesting that Trump has decided to get involved. And I think that there's a biblical case for what's going on there.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's incredible because Trump came out and said how long it had been since, and you're going back now, it's been months since U.S. ships, including the Navy, have been going through the Red Sea. They've avoided it. And he said, ultimately, we aren't going to follow the Biden administration's policies on this. We are going to take the Houthis head on. So there's this first level of this, and I think it's really interesting, as you say, there's a biblical case to be made for this. This is going to come up. I can see this is going to come up, and we may have to do a special on this. It's going to be in the upcoming Bible Magazine, if you subscribe to that, which, of course, we know you'd like to subscribe to that. And anybody that doesn't, please do so. But in the upcoming Bible Magazine, we're going to deal with this, and that is if America is part of the Tarshish powers, as we see it in Ezekiel 38. Does it fit into that family of nations? And in a short answer is, and I think we discussed this last time, the short answer is yes. It is one of the national offspring of Britain. And so if you want to say something to that again, you can. But that being the case, it's really important that we see it as a maritime power. So I think that's one, you know, when we dissect what Tarshish is and what it looks like, one of the features is it is this maritime trading power. Now, that maritime trading power is moving for its own self-interests. And I said this before, when Britain and America under Biden first moved to stop the Houthis, which they weren't able to do. It's obviously they're still there doing it. They called it Operation Guardian of Prosperity. So here is the Tarshish powers moving for their own self-interest. And they're doing it again, and they're saying it's costing the world billions to reroute trade around the Horn of Africa. And so here we have them actually, as of, I think it was yesterday, over the weekend, starting to hit the Houthis. Now, here's where, Pete, this is what I thought was interesting, because they are actually saying that they are going to hit hard. The new defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, is an absolute, he calls it peace through strength, but he is, I don't like to say it, but he's excited to get into the weeds here and show that America is powerful and is able to deal with this. So they are saying they're not just going, this is not just a little message. They are going in heavy, heavy. There was reports that they've been targeting the Houthi leadership. So they are going extremely hard against the Houthis in Yemen to open up world trade. Now, this also is a huge benefit to Israel, because the Houthis have been attacking Israel, have been attacking Israeli ships. So there's that. And there's the next level, and that is they are saying openly that this is a warning to Iran. So when we look at, and this is going to be the conversation as we have these conversations, and we're, you know, ultimately we watch the developments, we look for essentially a shakedown in the Middle East to be in a situation that resembles Ezekiel 38. So, and there's the two, it's almost like when you get together, there's the fronts to look at. And the first front is the Middle East, and the shakedown continues. And I think that's how I see the Houthis is, in order for Israel to have peace and prosperity and to be living without walls, bars, and gates, as we see them in Ezekiel 38, you can't have any of that. You've got to have a new Middle East. So on the Yemen front, that seems to be certainly going ahead. It's a warning to Iran. And Iran is, there's been reports of them pushing to further enrich their uranium. Israel, they say that Israel watches the uranium enrichment, I think, closer than the Iranians do. So Israel knows. Israel knows what it's doing. We are on the edge, I think, of actually potentially, although we're not a prophet outside of what the scripture tells us, and we don't know exactly the order of events. We know we've got to move toward peace, and there's some other things there. I'm going to ask you a question on this, Pete, but what we've got to see is this peace settle down, and how are you going to do that with Iran threatening? And it was the same with Hamas, it was the same with Hezbollah. So if Iran is pushing toward enrichment, Israel will act. So we're at the Middle East is at a crossroads, and this is what they're saying, is that the Houthis, yes, America wants to deal with them. Yes, they want to get world trade moving again through the Suez Canal and the Red Sea. But even bigger, this is a warning to the Iranians. So we're looking at a Middle East being reshaped, and that is something that I think fits in. Now, Pete, I'm going to throw it to you, because you mentioned a biblical connection, and I know there's a few places we can go here. What are you thinking?
The big picture, and you're absolutely right in saying that what the Americans are doing in taking on the Houthis, yes, it's the, you know, getting global trade moving and all of the, you know, global trade, really, you're talking billions of dollars that the Americans want, so that it's in their interest that trade is moving. But in dealing with the Houthis, as you said, it's a real shot across the bowels of Iran. And that does matter, because you're not going to open your Bible anywhere and find the Houthis. You're not going to sort of, you know, find any nation in terms of Yemen or the Houthis being mentioned. But what we do know is that scripturally, Iran is mentioned, and it's Ezekiel 38, and you've referred to Ezekiel 38 already, where we're told that confederate with Gog of the land of Magog, and we understand Gog to be Russia, the head of Russia, and we understand Magog to be the territory that we think is the old ancient Scythian territory, which certainly compromises part of the likes of Ukraine today. But with Gog coming down into Israel is verse 5, Persia. Now that is so significant, because Persia is Iran. And yet on the opposite side of nations is, verse 13, Sheba and Dedan. Now here we're moving into sort of Yemen territory. We're moving down into the likes of Saudi Arabia and further down Oman, Yemen, Sheba and Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish. So we understand historically what this is talking about is the Gulf nations, and Tarshish is Britain. The merchants of Tarshish, you know, we've understood for many years to be the Commonwealth nations, and we would include the likes of America amongst that power because of the ancient links between Tarshish, Britain, and America. So you also point out, John, that Tarshish needs to be this maritime power at the time of the end. And you know, you just have to do a very basic search of Tarshish in your Bibles to see that that's a key identifier of who Tarshish is. So we're so interested as Bible students to see at the time of the end, you've got two groups of nations. The first group, Ezekiel 38, sort of verse 1 to 6, which is the likes of Russia, Iran, the North African states, you know, Ethiopia, Sudan, Libya, Goma, we're talking sort of European powers. You've got those groups of nations. And on the other side, verse 13, the Gulf nations, Tarshish, the Commonwealth nations of Tarshish, the likes of America, I believe, is there. So you've got these two great groups of nations that are starting to sort of vie off against each other. And another ancient prophecy, Daniel 11, doesn't describe those groups of nations, it doesn't list them. It simply talks about the king of the north and the king of the south. And the king of the north and king of the south territory, the king of the north territory is the territory above Israel. The king of the south territory is that below Israel. So we're interested, I think, to see that this random Iranian-backed militia group, the Houthis, that probably, if we're honest, you know, if we'd said just over a year ago, who's heard of the Houthis, most of us would be asking how to spell it, let alone know who they are. And yet this little Iranian-backed, so important, Ezekiel 38, verse 5, Persia is amongst the group against the likes of Israel at the time of the end. This little group is somehow having this impact that's bringing not just America, but Britain, the ships of Tarshish, to a location in the south. And so I think we're perhaps seeing this, that the sort of naval vessels of the king of the south come into play in the southern territory below Israel. So I think it is really interesting, and I think that's the biblical case for what's going on in that area.
Yeah, that's really good, Pete, and I think also really helpful to just keep that in mind. When I was thinking about this discussion again, I pulled out a book that was properly called a booklet, I think. It is Guardians of Israel and Arabia, which right away is a super interesting title. Now, this is, I have to say, was written by my father, Paul Billington, September 1990. So, you know, we've been watching these things for a long time. But Guardians of Israel and Arabia, and ultimately it goes through, proves the Tarshish connections, shows how Britain and America are a part of this, and goes through some of the history. But in that book, just listen to this quote, and I'll see what you think of this. He writes under the heading, "A Development Foreseen by Bible Students," and quotes a gentleman by the name of George Stanley Faber writing in 1806. So 1806. So I remember you're better at math than I am, but I'm going to give that the old 224 years ago. Is that... I don't know if that passes. 1806.
Not far off.
Okay. Ready. Okay. "As certain as it is that the Confederacy," which you're talking about, the two power banks as we see them in Ezekiel 38. So this is what he's talking about. "As certain as it is that the Confederacy of Armageddon will, in part at least, be directed against Judah and Jerusalem. So certain is it that the Jews will begin to be restored by the great maritime power of the age. Hence, it will necessarily follow that, as the one is hostile and the other friendly to Judah, the great maritime power cannot be leagued in friendly alliance with the Confederacy. These two powers, the Southern and the Northern, they are destined to be enemies. This is not something that we are coming up with now. This is something that Bible students have looked for a very long time. And I think that when we look at it today, just as you've been saying, this is, we're going further down history, watching the same expectation unfold.
John, it's interesting. I don't know about you, but I sort of had, comment made to me just in the last couple of months, given America's sort of change in position in relation to certainly their sort of diplomatic strategy towards Russia. Is that something you've picked up? The sort of America softening their stance towards Russia. And you've just quoted there that writer from 219 years or so ago. And that writer is making a really, really interesting point, isn't he? That we would wholeheartedly agree with, that you've got these two great groups of nations, one of them, the King of the South, being this particularly powerful maritime power. I mean, we should be clear that Daniel 11 says the King of the North comes with many ships. But clearly the sort of great identity of the King of the South is this maritime power, that they are antagonistic towards each other. Now, that's always what we've expected. You and I are comfortable placing America amongst the Tarshish group of nations, and hence we're interested to see Trump doing what he's doing currently against the Houthi rebels. We think, that places America where we'd expect them to be. And yet, I had a couple of conversations recently with people saying, but America seems to be, far from antagonistic towards Russia at the moment. They seem to be cozying up. What's going on there? Have you had anything like that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 100%. And it is, when you first see it, you kind of go, where's this going to go? Yeah, and that's okay. Yeah. We look at these things, but you just know, like, if 219 years ago, old George Stanley Faber can look at these things and see it. We don't, you don't sit now and go, maybe we got it wrong. There's none of that. But Trump actually answered this with Zelensky in the office, because Zelensky's pushing him to go, come on, I want you to be more, don't try and, talk as if Trump is anything other than just another terrorist. And Trump says, he goes, how do you expect me to make a deal if I basically belittle Putin, in the media, and then come to him and say, you want to make a deal? You're not going to get anywhere. So it's public relations 101. Even if it's somebody you don't agree with, if you plan on making a deal with them, you're not going to chew them out. So I think it's just him being pragmatic to say, we want a deal here. And in fact, he said, listen, we're on Ukraine's side. We've done a lot. But he just didn't want to come across as being 100% pro-Ukrainian if he's trying to cut a deal with Putin. So I think, as far as America's stance, they used Russia against Trump to kind of say that there was this collusion that Trump had with Russia. So Trump's a little bit, he's a little sensitive on the Russia front. At the same time, I don't think, certainly those in his administration, I don't think they're on some of them, I don't think they're under any illusion. Russia is a bad player. I do note, though, that Britain, of anybody, knows that Russia's a bad player, because you've had, they've been poisoning, their enemies on British soil. Britain's like, we're pretty sure we know what their character is.
Yeah.
And I think Trump, underneath, I think he does. At the same time, if you're going to try and make a deal, that's what that is.
I quite agree. And I think, you know, the point you just made about, you know, the fact that he's practically self-confessed to say, listen, you know, I haven't got any choice. If I want to make a deal, you know, I can't be saying these sorts of things, you know, to the media. You know, we've got a long-standing position in terms of where the nation really stands against the Russia. But on the other hand, you know, if we're going to create some form of peace, then that's what we've got to do. I think that there's all sorts of really interesting big picture pieces going on here, though. Can I just comment for a moment?
The problem is you say something and then my head's like, oh, yep.
Yeah, racism. Well, you know, I see that what we expect at the time of the end, and we think, you know, we're in the last days, but right at the time of the end, is that the sort of Nebuchadnezzar image of Daniel 2 is to stand on its feet. So East and West have got to stand on its feet. So in Ezekiel 38, we see, yes, the likes of Russia, Iran, Libya, Ethiopia, but we also see the likes of Goma, and we believe that the sort of Magiite territory sort of crosses, you know, east into the sort of eastern part of the West, as it were. So needless to say, what that means is that we're looking for the image to stand on its feet, which is that somehow there's going to be an alignment of sorts between Russia, the Eastern power, and the Europe in the West. And at the moment you think, well, that's just a million miles off. I mean, Europe is feeling abandoned by America at the moment. Europe's feeling furious with Russia. You know, Europe's talking about putting some form of army together because NATO seems to be collapsing and they don't have the sort of support and backing that since the Second World War they've been able to rely on with America. And they've just been reminded, listen, if someone comes to power in the American democracy that says, do you know what, you know, this isn't our number one, we're going to make America great again, then you know, there's not much they can do about it. They all are still kowtowing to the American administration, but actually, really behind closed doors, they're furious and they're sort of struggling and they're wanting to take the fight, as it were, but they can only do so with America. So what's going on then in the big picture? We just wonder that the very peace that Trump is attempting to work on, the deal that he's working on, could bring a form of peace between East and West, which is something that, in order for the image to stand on its feet, you know, may need to happen. And yet, at the same time, behind the scenes, Europe is saying we need to sort of get a Confederate and be an army. But the problem with Europe at the moment is it's continually dissolving and fragmenting. The sort of European dream of being sort of something like America, the United States of Europe, just doesn't exist. I mean, you've got, you know, in France, a right-wing, you know, movement. You've got in Germany the case. Obviously, we know all about Brexit. And so Europe is sort of fragmenting. Yet at the same time, there's voices and noises saying, we've got to come together and create an army. And at the same time, what's happening because of Trump is potentially some form of peace between East and West. And all of that's interesting because we might expect at some point to see actually Europe starting to talk to Russia. And you know, we're not seeing it at the moment, but we are going to see it at some stage. And yet, what was all that talk about an army for? Well, that might be useful a little later on when we understand from the book of Revelation that at some stage, the Pope, when the Lord Jesus Christ returns, will say to Europe, listen, you know, come with me, and they'll give their power and strength to the beast. And so all that work around a European army may be useful, but actually not to fight against Russia, but at some stage to fight against the Lord Jesus Christ, who will be back in the earth in Jerusalem. So there's loads of things going on, sort of really big picture things that I think are, you know, are potentially of real interest, albeit we might be just seeing the sort of seedbed of it at the moment, as opposed to seeing, that detail just fits perfectly with what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, okay, so there's lots there to unpack. My first thought is this, actually, and this is what you're talking about. If we go back to the book, Guardians of Israel and Arabia. Now, if I could put that there. Guardians of Israel and Arabia. Now, what's happening is Europe is actually waking up to the fact that that the U.S. is actually not very interested in being a guard to them. So that's really significant, because they've felt since World War II and even earlier that the United States was their protector. I can speak for living in Canada. Canada 100% believes that the U.S. is our protector. We don't have to worry about anything because the U.S. is there. Ukraine is waking up to the fact that actually there's a limit to how much we will take care of you. And Europe is saying, if you're willing to let Ukraine fall, what's the guarantee that you won't let us fall? In fact, Trump is saying that they may move a significant number of the forces out of Germany, U.S. forces, and maybe move them into, I think it might have been Poland or something. So in one hand, the U.S. is still even itself going, are we going to protect Europe? There's many voices there saying they will. But when we come to Ezekiel 38, who's the guard over Europe, as we would expect? Gog. Yeah, it's Gog.
Russia.
It's Russia.
Yeah.
Russia's the guard. So you actually, it's like Europe is having to, is now the cogs are spinning in their head to say, what are we going to do? Are we going to move to a new European army? How are we going to handle our security? How are we going to pay for this? The reality is that as we get close to the time of the end, it's guardians of the U.S., Britain, and those, they're guardians of Israel and Arabia. Europe's guard comes from Russia. They don't like Russia right now. They may not like Russia. That is irrelevant. You know, ultimately, now, incredibly, if you go back, now, this is the problem with this thing, because it comes in your head and you go, Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, gave a speech long before the Ukraine war, saying that if there was ever to be peace in Europe, it would be only obtainable with Russia. And even the Vatican has been long time trying to push these forces together. Now, you mentioned the standing up of the image on its two legs. When we cut east and west, those two legs are entities that have to still exist and yet come together.
Sure.
Right? When we look at that in Revelation 16, we see that the frog spirits come out of the mouth of the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. That dragon and that beast, I remember, so they both have to exist, they both have to come up. So it's not that we're just waiting for just Europe to come up. It's not that we're just waiting for Russia. Both have to come together. I remember my father coming back from doing filming in Europe, probably with Frank Abel going back in the day. I could be wrong on that, or John Ramsden. Those were some of the ones. We've been going through some old Bible magazine archives, and so we're going to have some footage coming out, which is just really, really neat, because it's, you know, it's going back, and yet it's saying the same thing in many ways. He came back, and he was like, the Reichstag, to him, to see the Reichstag being rebuilt, he was like, this, you know, having lived through World War II, watching the Reichstag be rebuilt, he was like, Germany's coming up. When you start to talk about a European army, when you talk about them building themselves back up, there's talk about Germany rearming itself now, like there's like in a way that we haven't seen for a long time. This, all this is, fits exactly in. The incredible thing is, I don't think Trump looks and says, why should we pay for your security? He goes, why should we pay for your security? I can tell you why America was happy to do it up until now, because they said, I'm pretty confident we don't want the Germans to essentially have their army back again. We'll be here. We'll take care of things. They did not want a militarized Europe. Again, they'd seen it. It's like, it almost seems as if, people, have you forgotten what happens when Europe is rearmed? Do you know what I mean? So when we see the rearming of Europe, it's not insignificant. And Trump, I just think you don't know the beast that you are allowing to come up. You know?
Yeah, that's really.
You know, that's on that front. That's what I think. I think we do need a beast to come up. Yes, ultimately the guard will be Russia, but that beast still needs to rise up. And when we think it's the kingdom of men rising up in its final form, what do we find in Daniel 2? It's dreadful and terrible. So that's the character of what's coming. And I think, do you guys have a little amnesia? Like, I'm not sure you really want this beast to rise, but they think, well, we don't want to pay for their security anymore. All you're going to do is drag us into more war. So on one hand, he's bringing the southern powers together. And on the other hand, maybe he doesn't realize quite what he's, you know, the bear that he's waking up, / beast. But it is, so all that's significant. Okay, do you want anything else to say on that? If not, we're going to move.
No. Great, that was great.
Good. Okay, you're a gentleman. Let's just maybe just circle back. Because I always think, where are we most interested? Where are we most interested? And that's Israel. And on the Israel front, we could say, well, what's happened? Is there anything much that's happening? There's other news that's taking the headlines. It's maybe back to where we started. We are waiting to see peace come. We've never seen, I will say this, we have never seen a defense secretary in Pete Hegseth that we've ever seen before in America that I would be aware of that would be so pro-Israel. So when we're looking at a Middle East changing, we are looking at some over the next, I think it could be the next year or 2 years, it's going to be incredibly significant. Incredibly significant on that front. Israel, that is the place to watch. These other power groups need to do their thing. But in the middle, it is the kingdom of God that is going to come out of all of this. And Pete, for me, that's where this gets exciting, because when we see these things develop, we know, I like, it actually is a bit of a phrase from the writer John Thomas. He talks about Jesus Christ orchestrating events so that it will be ready for his coming. He's the one moving things so that it's ready for, and that's a very loose translation, it's him that's moving events so that it's ready for his return. And that, for me, is incredible. But we haven't seen the players that have been brought in here. The threats to Iran now seem more real than ever. The hostility between these northern and southern powers have never, including Europe now, have never been more. It all is just continuing to line up.
I think that it is really interesting. And we know from Revelation 16, you know, you talk about, you know, the dragon, the beast, the false prophet,
yep,
you know, all being in existence at the time of the end. You know, the dragon, as you point out, you know, the eastern power, the beast, the western power, the false prophet, the papacy. But what's coming out of their mouth is this frog-like spirit that's going to draw the nations to Israel. And as you point out to us, you know, that's where the eye's got to be. Stay focused on that land, even when it seems to be not in the news on any given week, which is quite unusual, but if that seems to be the quiet, still stay zoned in on Israel. And why? Well, because the frog-like spirits, and we understand the frog-like spirits are the spirits of the sort of democracies, you know, and the spirit of humanism and human rights that have come out of the world's democracies. You know, we see it in all the various movements across the world. And we see it, don't we, focus in Israel on human rights. You know, we see the world constantly furious with Israel. We see the United Nations, which are beleaguered at the moment without the American administration's support. But that group of the world nations, you know, constantly bringing their agenda against Israel again and again and again. And we shouldn't be surprised, because actually it's that frog-like spirit that is going to gather the nations to the Battle of Armageddon. And it also helps us understand that this administration that have been brought in America, which of course the angels have worked at in order to bring this sort of pro-Jewish group, And yes, they're pro-Jewish, and Israel is basking in that in many respects. But the rest of the world is really struggling with Trump. I mean, yes, Israel is loving it, Trump is loving it, but Europe, even the likes of Britain and let's face it, Canada right now, Mark Carney, has just gone to France for his first trip abroad. He hasn't gone to America, as you'd expect that the sort of the Canadian leader to do. So all this is really interesting. You've got nations really struggling with Trump and the things that he stands for. He's pro-Israel. Israel's loving it. But I feel like behind the scenes is this growing feeling of anti-Semitism, as they don't like the fact that the world king, as it were, Trump, is giving his backing to Israel. That people are, they have to at the moment sort of, in public still sort of pay obeisance of sorts to Trump because of the fact that the American dollar is worth so much. But behind the scenes, I think, political leaders across the world are like furious. And the things that Trump stands for, yes, it's potentially going to create a sort of peace for Israel at the moment. But behind the scenes, anti-Semitism, I think, is building and building and building, which is just of real interest,
It is,
given that that spirit's going to draw the nations to Armageddon.
Totally, 100%. It will. The interesting thing is how far the Trump administration is going. They're even now starting to track down. They've started at some of the leaders at. There was one of the leaders of the Columbia University Palestinian protests. They're deporting
Deporting.
them. They're deporting them. They are like tracking down, going through video and saying, "We're coming after you." The level to which they are, it's so interesting because prophetically, I, by the way, and we'll try and put a little something in the magazine on this, to see America as anything else other than one of the young lions is it's that's a hard sell. It's a hard sell. It would just be so curious to, if you didn't see them as one of the offspring, and in that prophecy, you go, it would be a head scratcher when you see everything they're doing now. But if they're a guardian in any level, to say, well, we're going to root this out at home, no other nation is going to this level. No other nation is doing this. So the only thing
But I
is.
think interesting, if a nation was doing this, say the Biden administration was doing this, but in a much more sort of diplomatic way, then the other nations may sort of, in a sort of cordial way, go along with it, and yeah, this is sort of amiable and this is okay. But this Biden didn't do this, this wasn't what they stood for. Is Trump doing it? Which is brilliant in terms of Israel at the moment and the Jews at the moment, but the sort of downside for them is that most of the nations of the world are struggling like mad with how they actually deal with Trump. And at some stage, the things that he stands for may well, in fact, I think they will come back, as it were, to bite the Jews and Israel, because actually that is developing this anti-Semitic feeling as Trump is doing what he's doing. And let's face it, we as Christadelphians look on at Israel, and we're so interested in that nation. They're God's witnesses, and we know that those who bless that nation will be blessed. Trump knows that,
I
and
think he does,
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, he does. Sorry, you carry on.
Well, only to say that the rest of the world doesn't buy into that. And actually, for the likes of Catholic Europe, for the likes of the Muslims, they think that they've replaced the Jewish, nation. That they superseded the Jews. The Jews, religiously speaking, yes, they once were part of the planet, but they crucified Jesus. So for most Christians, that they've replaced the Jews, and therefore the very existence of the Jews is an anathema. The very fact that they're in the land is even more difficult. Then the Muslims, well, they don't see Jesus as the Son of God, but they certainly, feel that what they've done is replace the Jews, and they do see Jesus as a prophet. that the Jews killed. So yeah, I think the sort of major religions of the world, sort of the Christianity, Islam, they see themselves as the replacement of the Jewish nation, and that therefore their very existence and position at the center of world affairs in Jerusalem, in the land of Israel, in the promised land, is, well, you can see anti-Semitism boiling and boiling and boiling as Israel continues to enact policies that do land grabs, as they take the likes of I'm sure they will take the likes of Gaza. I mean, Zeph and I too, which when we chatted last time, we looked at and we reflected on, Ekron being rooted out and the like. But it tells us the seacoast shall be dwellings and cottages for shepherds and folds for flocks. The coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah. I mean, it
In
tells us
the end,
that the Jews are going to get that back.
in the end, that's the way it's going.
So that I feel like the American administration is sort of is supporting that, even if they don't know Zephaniah 2, but I suspect that some of them probably know it well. But even if they don't know it, that by supporting the Jews and allowing what's happened in Gaza, and but perhaps it'll be the same in the likes of the West Bank. In fact, I'm sure it will be, because when Gog comes down into the land of Israel, Ezekiel 38, verse 8, they come onto the West Bank. And I think they'll come there because at some stage the Jews will say, do you know what? We're fed up with this. We're never letting anything like this happen again. Hamas, we don't want in the likes of Gaza. It's not to say that there won't be some Palestinians there. I think that there probably will be some Palestinians there. Many clearly are going to be rooted out and driven away. But I think there probably will be, some Palestinians there. But I think that clearly the coastal territory is going to be for the House of Judah. So the Jews will be there too. Likewise on the West Bank, when the King of the North comes down. But all these policies that the Trump administration is sort of subtly or not so subtly supporting is building this spirit of anti-Semitism amongst the nations, which will eventually draw them to Armageddon.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you are seeing, see, before in America, it was the idea was that it was a nonpartisan issue to support Israel, even though under the surface, it still always was probably a little bit, political this way or that way. But now it really is turning, like Trump is hyper making it political. He's really doubling down on that. And frankly, Obama and Biden really pushed the other way. Maybe that's, you as the pendulum swings this way, it's like Trump says, you know
That's
what?
interesting.
You're going to watch. I will be the most pro-Israel, pro-Jewish you've ever seen. I'm going to root out every anti-Semite in our land. I'm going to support Israel. I'm going to take on Iran. Like, he's doubling down on he's going to support the Jews. And I'm sure he still refers to the fact that he was saved for a mission. He didn't, when he survived being shot. And I think in his mind, the I'll, those that bless you will be blessed and cursed. That is, I'm sure, is in his psyche somewhere. But all of this is hyperinflating the anti-Semitism that we see. Agreed 100%. It's sad, really, because when you see the nations, it's like the nations are being tested, in all this. After October 7th and to now, I think in all this, the nations show their true colors. Europe has shown its true colors, and it's left wanting. That's the way it seems. The morality that is being shown in the nations as they show themselves is again only bringing us closer to Armageddon, I think, because all
I
these
think the
things
bias you
are
see
so
in the
bad.
media, and
By the way,
in the United
the
Nations.
BBC and the New York Times and these ones, like of the worst, so bad.
And I think that, your average person reads that and assumes that what they're being given is something straight down the line, and this is without bias. But it's chronically biased towards or against Israel. And, you know, the United Nations, which is sort of held up, you know, in Western classrooms across the world, you know, the United Nations Conventions, the Rights of the Child, and United Nations Human Rights, and the sort of conventions of the United Nations are sort of pushed through the world's media and into, you know, the thinking and the minds of children, young people, and businesses and organisations, and access to funding if you tick these boxes. But actually, you think this is an organisation that is chronically anti-Semitic.
It is.
You know, you have to do just some very, very basic looking at the resolutions that they've brought against nations. And for all the nations in the world, and, you know, you think of some of the nightmare places. I mean, the likes of Syria, that some of the, you know, places in Africa. I mean, the likes of Congo has been in the news this last week, and the sort of chronic atrocities there, or
they just get
go across the oceans,
totally
go
overlooked.
To the likes of North Korea, and you know, it's just ludicrous that Israel is sort of held up as being this rogue state, when in comparison to so many of the nations just around it, it just feels farcical. And well, it is farcical, and what it is anti-Semitic. And it's that anti-Semitic spirit that we shouldn't be surprised to see in the world in the last days, because that there's going to have to be this spirit against the Jewish nation and against the people in the land to draw the nation of the world to say, yeah, we'll come, and to want to come to the Battle of Armageddon, for Ezekiel 38 to happen, for Revelation 16 to happen.
Well, incredibly, and I may have said this to you before, if you look back in Pope Francis's book, it's the last encyclical he put out. It was called Fratelli Tutti, which means all brothers. And he speaks...
Fraternity.
Yeah, fraternity. Yeah. So he speaks in there. It's unbelievable. You look in there and he says that he wants to essentially actually support and give more power to the UN, to the United Nations. He says the organization, the problem is, it is, his words coming up to this, he's, you know, essentially it doesn't have the power to do much. He says the organization needs to be given teeth. that's what he says. And as soon as I read it, I thought, whoa, if that organization was given teeth, there's literally one country that would feel just about every single one of those teeth would be Israel. Right, and yeah. that is exactly what we expect. So,
is it interesting though that the latter day beast, you know, there's some iron teeth.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And he's calling for the teeth. It's Pete of things for prophecy nerds. You read it and you're like, what? This is exactly what we would. I mean, you say we'd expect it, you kind of would expect it, but you almost, when you see it coming out of the mouth of the false prophet saying this organization needs to be given teeth, and oh, by the way, 95% of the resolutions that it comes up with are against Israel, you just think, wow. It's frightening, because you know what it'll do. It'll be the standing of the kingdoms of men that will ultimately come against little Israel, overwhelm them. And then we know the great Messiah shows. So it's with a heavy heart we see the world going against them, and at the same time you just know that this. It was just recently. Maybe we could probably talk all night. We just went through Purim in Israel. Israel, you know, the Jews just celebrated Purim. I think the type that is in Esther, it's like, God sets it up that Haman, who would the king like to delight more than myself? And he lets himself go up and up and up and up and up. And that is exactly the way it's going to be. The Vatican is going to think it's absolutely got it sewn up when Europe and Russia come together. And it's going to sit and be so proud, excited.
Smug.
That's exactly what it is. And but it has to be, though. It has to be that way, because when Messiah comes, it is going to be the greatest salvation he comes with.
That's right.
You know, I think that is. But when you see it come, start to come together, wow.
Yeah, and the story of Esther is just a gorgeous one, isn't it? Because actually, you know, we you say there, little Israel, and you know, of course, it is awful, and you know, there's a certain excitement in seeing Bible prophecy come to pass, but there's a certain trepidation for in the knowledge of the things that will happen. And yet, isn't it lovely that in the story of Esther, that actually the triumph for the Jewish nation is that they become so central to what happens next in the story, and that there's great rejoicing and happiness as one, they're saved, and two, they become central to the success of what happens next in the world. And that's exactly what will happen at the time of the end.
That, well, it ends,
yes, it is awful. They'll be brought to their knees, but in the end, they will be saved out of it by the Messiah. And then they'll become central, not just in the land of Israel, but they'll be, Zechariah describes them being sown across the world, be able to be an influence for good on all peoples.
Oh, it becomes the nation of Israel becomes the kingdom of God, which then becomes the vehicle to save the rest of the earth. That is no question, and it's so gorgeous. That part is gorgeous. In Esther, if we play that type through, it's so epic, because what happens? King Ahasuerus turns around and says the Jews can fight, right? And you get all these people that actually turn around and actually say, no, we will, and they bring gifts or whatever. And this is exactly what we see when we come to the prophecy. You know, they'll take hold of the skirt of him that's a Jew and say, no, we'll go with you. We've heard God's with you. So that part of it, of Esther, the way it ends. But the only way, it's no different than the type with Joseph. The only way for those brothers to, you know, God lets them actually come around Joseph, you know, in that type. And he lets it come to such a climax before it's all revealed. And Joseph is revealed. The same when we come to Esther. Haman, he lets him get right up here until, you know, the revealing of Esther.
Yeah, no, it's gorgeous. We should do a session one day on you know, what next for the Jewish people, because I do think that, you know, we can, you know, we get to the Battle of Armageddon and the headlines stop, but actually there's such a great story after that is worth a good discussion.
So I've got to plug a couple of things, because I've got to get good at plugging. Two things we got to plug. Number one, Bio Magazine. Subscribe to the Bio Magazine. If you're struggling with the website, join the club. We're working on it. The website hopefully will be. We got a new one coming out. Hopefully, I'm going to be safe and try and say the next couple of months. And then ordering the Bio Magazine will be easier than ever before. Number one. Number two, there's another. We've just posted up a short out of it. We've had a conversation with somebody. Yonatan Bahar from the mountains of Israel, from Mount Gerizim. And that is something that I think was a very interesting, a super interesting conversation. The amazing thing is, I asked him, I said, are we in the time of the redemption? You know, if in your gut, what do you think? And you know what, Pete? And his sign for him that he holds as the sign is actually the mountains of Israel, the land of Israel flourishing again, the fruits of the land. To see all that, he said, that is the sign of, he said, we're in the footsteps of the Mashiach when we see the land producing, which is right out of Deuteronomy, right? The land follows
Ezekiel 36.
Yeah.
You know, I'll put on the fruit will come on the West Bank.
Yeah, and that's for him. He's there sitting on Mount Gerizim. The vineyards are there flourishing, and you say, are we there? And he says, we're in the footsteps of the Messiah. I think we are so privileged to see this, these things come to pass. I obviously, you know, if you said to me, do you want to do a special on the future of Israel? Baby, you're let's in. Do it. Yep. Okay, anything else? We've got to end, Pete, because, you know, we could go all night. What else do you want to say?
No, great. Thanks ever so much.
You were turning up a passage. I don't want to cut you. What were you thinking?
Oh, well.
Shoot, come on. We got another minute.
Going to Ezekiel 36, I just think it's so significant, you know.
It is so significant.
The reason that Jonathan would say that is because Ezekiel 36, O mountains of Israel, you shall shoot forth your branches and yield your fruit to my people of Israel.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that's why he's so confident about it. And then, you know, Ezekiel 37, the Valley of Dry Bones, well, we think that is partially fulfilled. You know, soon the Spirit will be breathed into them in terms of life beyond physical life. But in as they recognize the one they pierced and mourn for him. And in Ezekiel 38, when Gog comes down, Gog comes onto the mountains of Israel. You know, you quoted John Thomas earlier, you know, John Thomas saying, you know, that we expect to see the Russian autocrat come to stand on the mountains of Israel, that when he does so, that is the image of Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, we just live in incredibly exciting times. And to me, it is amazing that you're having a chat with that Jewish friend from Mount Gerizim, who's saying that he believes that the great sign is the sort of fruitfulness of the mountains. Well, you know, that's exactly what we believe too. It's exactly what we think is going to be the build up to the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I think, you know, if you're going through Bible prophecy and you're thinking, has that happened? Has that happened? You can put a tick next to Ezekiel 36, verse 8. You put a tick next to verse 9. Put a tick next to verse 10. I mean, we're not quite into, I don't think, Ezekiel 36 and verse. I mean, you can put a tick next to verse 24. Verse 25, then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean, and all your filthiness from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart will I give you. Well, I think that hasn't quite happened yet. That's the sort of the second stage in Ezekiel 37, that the dry bones come together. We've seen that happen. They're back in the land. The nation's resurrected. It's the biggest sign anyone will ever, ever see. It's the promise of the hope of the resurrection for anyone. And then, before long, they're going to be breathed into, and they're going to be made this incredible nation again. I mean, what fools are we if we don't sit up and take note of this and realize that Bible prophecy is on, before long, the Messiah really is going to come back.
It feels like every day just continues. You wake up, it's just, you know, everything continues as it was, know?
But that's what it felt like in Eastern Ukraine until recently. Yeah. That's what it felt like when those women were in the watchtowers in Western Israel, and they sort of said, oh, we think there's something in this thing, there's something, you know, but the reality is that the sort of you know, the Israeli army were confident. Oh, you know, we just can't go. And this is a nation that, of all nations, knows that things don't go on. And yet they got relaxed. And, you know,
we all get so relaxed, it comes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to the point why we know it, you know, this is the major issue, is when you come to the last words in Revelation 16 before the coming of the Messiah there, what is it? Watch. He's like, just watch, like, you
keep
your garments. You don't be caught unawares. Don't be caught unawares. Be ready, be watching. And Pete, that's why we do these conversations. That's why we get together and do this. It's beautiful. I love it. Thank you for your time. We'll do it again.
My pleasure. Yeah, so good to be with you again.
Cheers. God bless.
Yeah. Oh, good.
You got, is your tea good? Because it's getting late for you.